south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, you know, in the last couple of shows, I've been talking about boomers, you know, baby boomers, because they've been writing a lot of emails to me lately. In fact, a good percentage of people who get the hell out of Dodge, you know, get that plan B going are boomers because they got the money to do it. Well, some of them anyway, and their kids are all out of the house, of course. So they've got no hangers-on, no baggage, no people to support. Well, I take that back. Some of them still have a 35-year-old kid living in the basement. How'd that happen? I know how that happened. I've got some boomer friends who have this certain kind of refrain they keep telling themselves. I remember hearing it myself quite a bit when I was in my 20s and my friends were starting to get married and have kids. They'd say, you know, Johnny, I'm going to do things a lot differently than my parents did. I'm not going to make my kids suffer like I did while growing up. I'm not going to make them go out and get a paper route or work at McDonald's or have an after-school job. I don't want them begging for quarters, cutting other people's grass, shoveling snow, or washing cars. I did all that, and I don't want that for my kids. My parents didn't have any dough, so I had to do that. It was tough for me growing up. I'm not going to put them through what I went through. Going to school full-time, working that night job or on weekends. I want my kids to have fun and concentrate on their studies. No distractions like work, so they can have time to focus on school and a career. Make it easier for them to get that law or medical degree. Yeah, right. We see how that turned out. Which, coincidentally, brings us this email from Blake. He says, Johnny, I'm Blake from Seattle, the rancidly woke capital of the world. He says, you've spoken about boomers lately. I think you're giving them a bad rap. I think the world's two biggest problems are government and social media. And the boomers, yes, they're part of the government, so they are part of the problem, but they've got nothing to do with social media. Anyway, Johnny, I'm 70 years old, and I do remember a time when we didn't let our government do the thinking for us. He says, the wife and I were on Facebook when it first came out. She thought it was so cute to connect with the kids and grandkids, but eventually, I was the first of us to understand the extensive damage Facebook has done to the culture. That's no fault of the boomers. The millennials invented that. Twitter's even worse, and forget TikTok. That's just a convenient way for China to farm personal information about us U.S. citizens. It's a tragedy how idiot adolescents have been sucked into that one. These days, he says, I'm laughed at for my flip phone, but I want my freedom. Everybody I know with smartphones lives on them. Then he says, I find it both comical and troubling that my 24-year-old grandson doesn't know how to get anywhere without using Google Maps. He can't make change without a calculator and can't change a tire. But he's really good at killing enemies in the video games he spends hour after hour addicted to. Seems kids his age have lost the ability to think, and there are a million ways to prove it. Starting with the jabs, the lockdowns, and those crazy pronouns they readily embrace. So then he says, am I a pessimist cynically suggesting that pop culture is the graveyard of intellectual thought? Never in a million years would I have considered that. Wink, wink. Yep, Johnny, us old boomers are handing the world over to a real bunch of winners. Like in the old days when the king died and handed the torch over to his 12-year-old son. That always worked out well. Anyhow, a few years back, I ditched my smartphone for a flip phone. And my favorite part of Twitter is how I don't use it. Oh, and since I'm on a complaining rant here, another thing that really irks me is this global warming stuff. There will be no political solution to climate change. They'll only screw it up more. When has government done anything right? Meanwhile, he says, people in undeveloped countries still burn wood and will keep doing so as the price of gas, oil, and everything else goes up. They'll just do what they always do, scavenge for branches out in the brush at no cost, just a little manual labor. In fact, there are over 1 billion people in the world that still cook with wood. But you and I can't cut down a sapling in the backyard to make room for a wider driveway. Even if we plant 10 replacement trees, we'll get a pink slip, a fine, and a criminal record. And then there's all those raving, government-connected lunatics saying that global warming will kill off the human race. Hell, humans got through the Great Ice Age of 12,000 years ago, where there were 2-mile-high glaciers covering all the way down past Illinois. People just don't understand history. Humans lived through periods when the whole world was 10 degrees cooler. Meanwhile, the idiot Chicken Littles of the world, with their bullhorns in control of the media, claim the whole human race will toast like a marshmallow if, in the next 10 years, the average world temperature raises by just 1 degree. On a brighter note, though, Johnny, when is your next seminar? I've been stupidly putting off going to your previous ones just for lack of initiative. Out of sight, out of mind, you know, but every rotten thing that's happening in America is glaringly in sight now, so I have no excuse not to sign on to your next one. By the way, Johnny, I'm soft-pedaling the seminar idea to my 24-year-old grandson, who's never been out of the country. I suppose, though, it would be too much to hope that you won't allow cell phone use during your seminar lectures. I fear that would be the only way to get my grandson's undivided attention. Signing off for now. Hope to see you soon. Blake in Seattle. All right, Blake, thanks for that. Hope to see you, too, at the next seminar. By the way, that'll be probably in March 2023, taking place again by popular demand in Guatemala and El Salvador. So if you're interested in getting the fire hose treatment coming down for a week with me and my crew, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll put you on the early bird waiting list. All right, now let's talk about buying and driving cars here in Latin America. The fact is, I'd say about from half to 3/4 of gringos and expats, once they get down here, buy a car, though not right away, usually after 6 months or so. Of course, there are some cities and towns you can live where you wouldn't need a car at all. Like, for example, if you live on or around Lake Atitlan, Guatemala, the most beautiful or second most beautiful lake in the world, it's been claimed. Depending who you talk to, it always vies for number one or number two with Lake Como in Italy. So, as far as driving around if you live there, since you get around those little towns around the lake by boat, obviously having a car would be overkill. Same thing if you live on or near Antigua, Guatemala. Yet another great soft landing place for gringos and expats, though I personally wouldn't want to live right smack dab in the city. It is kind of filling up with gringos and expats, but right outside the city, a great place to live. You can get around that place very easily on foot, don't need a car. But still, if you are used to having one up in the States, you might just buy one. Lots of gringos and expats get a car because they're so used to having one, but they don't use it much. As for me, in my 30-plus years down here, I'd say I've owned a car about 90% of that time. Now, I've had people ask me lots and lots of questions about cars here in Latin America. For example, what would be the best car to own? What kind of insurance coverage do I need? What kind of gas should I use? Where should I park it? Do I need a garage? What about mechanics, spare parts, maintenance? What are some of the good makes and model years to buy? What's the minimum amount of dough I might shell out to get a decent one? I get questions like those all the time and lots more. You know, one of the questions I get quite frequently is, how long can I expect a car to last down here? And if I sell it, what's the best way to do that? Do they hold their value? And what kind of resale value do they have? Well, today, let's talk about gringos and expats who have a car and want to sell it and get another one. Though, let's flip the tables a bit and talk about how to destroy the resale value of your car in 10 easy steps by following the Latin American car ownership example. So let's turn things around a bit, take a different approach. In other words, the easy way to destroy the resale value of your car is to do what the majority of Latin American men do when they buy a car. So I've put a little list together for you. Now, the following does not apply to that very small percentage, those children of the rich whose parents bought them a car. Because you see, the children of the rich have a little more class than the average Latino guy, and their parents, who forked over the dough, wouldn't allow them to get away with most of the stuff I'm going to mention on this list. Anyway, number one on the list, guaranteed to lower the resale value of your car, is to get fabric upholstery, especially beige and light-colored stuff. That way, every Coca-Cola and Taco Bell spill will leave a permanent history on the seats. Number two, be sure to install a massive aftermarket useless spoiler. Not only will it lower the resale value of your car, it'll lower the gas mileage too. Number three, load that car up with cute bumper stickers and neon lights and racing stripes too. And don't forget those university logos and stencils on the back window. Yep, you know, when I first got down here to Latin America, I used to think that was awful funny. You'd be driving behind a car with Texas State or University of Wisconsin stenciled on the back window, along with their football team's mascot. Now, as you know, hundreds of thousands of cars from up in the U.S. have made it down here to Latin America. Bumper stickers, university stencils, and all. The odd thing is, once those cars get down here, the Latinos never remove those stickers because of that extreme gringo wannabe thing. For them, it's a coolness factor. For us, it's just kind of stupid. So, next time you pull up to a car that's got the University of Wisconsin stenciled on the back window in big letters, do not roll your window down and yell, "Go Badgers" or "Go Packers." They won't know what the hell you're talking about. All right, number four on that list, how to instantly lower the resale value of your car. Don't forget to get a cheap window tint job that fades, peels, and bubbles. Remember, as with most every product in this world, there is good, better, and best. In other words, cheap, average, and expensive. And since, like this show, you get what you pay for, the expensive window tint jobs last forever and they look great. And the cheap window treatments that are probably half the price of the expensive ones will start peeling, bubbling, and disintegrating within a year or two. But still, no matter, the cheap stuff seems to be the popular choice down here. Same thing goes with most things, including, unfortunately, paint. We discussed that on a previous show. You know, when it comes to paint, house paint, car paint, any kind of paint, there's good, better, and best. You get what you pay for. Not only do Latinos buy the cheapest grade of house paint, they add water to it, too. If you don't believe it, just ask any gringo who's observed the process of his house getting painted. Of course, it would never say on the label to add water, but that's what they all do. All right, now we're up to number five on the list of how to destroy the resale value of your car. Be sure to leave it parked directly in the sun for long periods of time, so much so that the headlights and their plastic enclosures fog over and turn yellow. Yep, the sun's UV rays will do that to a car. Is it a good look then? Well, it must be. There are millions of cars here in Latin America that have that look. Number six, don't forget to load up the dashboard and driver's area with aftermarket junk like chrome knobs, cup holders, glow-in-the-dark stick shift levers, cutesy gas pedal covers, and don't forget, you should never toss those short-lived aromatic anti-stink trees hanging from the rearview mirror. Just keep them piling up for posterity. Oh, and don't forget to buy one of those chrome muffler extensions. Throw a couple of oversized boombox speakers in your trunk, too, while you're at it. Oh, and add some cheap chrome hubcap spinners, too. That's always a nice touch. All right, now for number seven on our list of how to destroy the resale value of your car in 10 easy steps. Don't ever change or clean those original floor mats. Don't spend the $20 necessary to replace them, even when you've got holes worn through them from your heel digging in at the base of the gas and brake pedals. Number eight, don't forget to actually name your car or vehicle and let the world know it with paint or stick-on letters. Whether it's Selma, Maria, Claudia, whatever, make sure you've got it in bold letters somewhere inside or outside the car. By the way, every chicken bus in Latin America is named after someone's wife, mother, or girlfriend. Apparently, there are no gay chicken bus drivers because they're all named after women. Oh, and the fact is, I've never seen a female chicken bus driver. So I guess there's a lot of lag time effect in that department, too. It'll come, it'll come. Then again, I've never seen a female plumber, cement contractor, painter, auto mechanic, roofer, glazer, electrician, or females in any of the skilled trades. You hear that, all you wokesters and militant feminists up in the first world? I guess we'll have to completely cancel Latin America, huh? All right, now, number nine on that list. Never clean the engine compartment or change the oil for that matter, no matter how black it gets. Oh, and forget about cleaning or changing the air filter, too. What, Senor Johnny? You mean cars have air filters? Come on, you're pulling my leg. All right, now, number 10 on the list. Don't pay attention to the fruit salad of idiot lights continuously blinking on your instrument panel. Don't think to get them checked out to see why they remain lit. They kind of look cool, break up the dashboard monotony, all colorful and blinking like a Christmas tree. Oh, wait a minute. We have a number 11 and number 12 as bonus points on the list. Here's bonus tip number 11. Make sure you don't have a spare tire, and if you have one, make sure it's flat. And never check to see if your jack actually works and you've got all the parts to it. And finally, bonus point number 12. Be sure to deck out your car with Jesus symbols, figurines, and biblical sayings. That way, you're sure to have some divine guidance when you have a flat tire and discover your spare is flat too. Hey, don't laugh. I think over the last couple of years, I've been in cars like Ubers and taxis and Latino friends' cars where there's been a flat. And three of those times, the spare was flat. And the fourth time, when I was in a taxi and had a flat, he went into the trunk and there was no spare at all. One of those times, the guy had a decent spare, but the jack was bent and didn't work. Yep, be prepared. Remember that Boy Scout model? Well, there's no Boy Scouts down here. Which reminds me of something really strange. You know, once I was driving around in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, and I hit a road in the big city called Calle Cub Scouts. Cub Scout Road. I'm not kidding. And it led right into another road called Girl Scout Road. Calle Girl Scouts. Which, unbelievably, turned into a road called Calle Boy Scouts. Yet there wasn't a single Boy Scout, Girl Scout, or Cub Scout office anywhere around. In the moment, I thought, looking at the street signs, this is crazy. Especially since I've never met a single Latin American boy or girl who's ever been in the Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, or Girl Scouts. But I guess they exist. And I would imagine with the requisite number of pervert Boy Scout and Cub Scout leaders, too. They ought to string those guys up by their weblos. But I digress. Man, did I digress. Anyway, since we're talking about cars and vehicles here in Latin America, here's some more interesting info. Food for thought that just might scare you a bit. Turns out, Mexico and Brazil are some of the two biggest auto manufacturing centers in the world. Of course, China beats everyone, but aside from China, Mexico and Brazil produce millions of cars a year with brand names we're all familiar with. But here's what you didn't know. The cars rolling off those assembly lines look identical to the models you see up in the States or in Europe, but they're not really. Even if they look exactly the same, how safe they actually are depends on where they're headed. Turns out vehicles destined to stay in Brazil or Mexico or stay in the rest of Latin America carry a code signifying there's no need for anti-lock braking, things like electronic stability control, or more than two airbags, if any. However, for the line of cars they export to the States or Europe, they have to meet much more stringent safety laws, including six airbags at least, and an ABS system, automatic brake and stability controls to compensate for slippery roads, etc. So basically what you've got is two versions of the same car that are priced pretty much the same and look exactly the same from the outside. But here's the thing. Just lately, articles have been coming out in the First World Press blaming high rate of auto-related fatalities in Mexico and the rest of Latin America on the car manufacturers themselves. They're calling out Latin American car manufacturers by saying that they purposely and knowingly install less safety devices than cars destined for the first world. In fact, according to the data from a group called Global New Car Assessment, that's GNCAP, a group that collects and analyzes crash and test data, their data shows that vehicle fatalities in Latin America are 3.5 times greater than that of the U.S. That's 350% more. Same thing goes with crashes and fender benders in general. In Latin America, there are 3.5 times as many, which again, they blame on the fact there are fewer safety items installed in vehicles for Latin America. By the way, just for reference, here in Latin America, Nissan's most popular models, the Versa and the Sentra, are packaged with just two airbags and an anti-lock braking system, which is more than required by the Mexican or most Latin American governments. Whereas those two basic models, the Nissan Versa and Sentra up in the States, are required to have a minimum of six airbags. By the way, one of Nissan's cheapest and most popular models in Mexico is called the Tesoro. It's so outdated, it's got only lap seat belts in the back seat, and some versions have no airbags at all, and that's legal, but not in the States or Europe. By the way, more than 300,000 of these Tesoros have been sold in Mexico in the past 6 years at about 10 grand a piece. That's why they're so popular. They're dirt cheap. In another example, Volkswagen, for one, began adding two airbags to its Classico model. The thing is, that same model sells in Europe and the U.S. as the Jetta. Comes standard with six, not two airbags. Oh, and here's something else you didn't know. The average car manufacturing worker in Mexico or Brazil, for example, a GM worker, gets paid $100 a week. That's about $2.50 an hour. Whereas his counterpart in the States or Europe gets $1,500 a week. That's 15 times more. And still, Americans wonder why big companies move their plants to the third world. Anyway, when you think about it, remember Henry Ford? He was criticized by the press back in the 1920s for paying his workers too much. And his answer was an excellent one. He said, "Why not? I have to pay them enough so they can afford to buy my cars, don't I?" Anyway, if a GM worker in Mexico or Brazil gets paid $100 a week, that means he can't afford to buy a car that's fully loaded with safety features. He's either got to buy a used car or have others in the family chip in for him to buy even the cheapest GM car at 10 grand. Because look, if you do the numbers, the average car in the United States, I think, costs around 45 grand now. About a year's salary for the average American. And if a GM worker in Mexico makes $100 a week, that's around $5,200 a year. So if he's going to drive at all, he's got no choice than to buy a low-end car with absolutely no frills like airbags and ABS braking. So now let's just say for a minute, you're an American and you never lived in Latin America and you read all about this stuff. How vehicles produced and manufactured in Latin America, even the ones that have names you're very familiar with, are basically lacking in many safety features. And that's why vehicle accidents and fatalities are 350% more than they are in the States. And that makes sense, right? Well, to a person like me who's been down here 30 plus years, this is the perfect definition of first world fake news and spin. Because the truth is, if you drive for any length of time here in Latin America, you'll find out it's not so much that the cars themselves are dangerous. Well, some of them are, of course, because they don't maintain them. But it's the fact that Latin America is the home to the shittiest, most thoughtless, undereducated, most careless, lunatic drivers in the world. So I'm calling out BS on this story, at least to the BS that conclusion points to, that 350% increase in fatalities and crashes is due to the lack of mandated safety measures like they've got up in the first world. That is pure BS. The people here just don't know how to f***ing drive. In my opinion, and the opinion of almost every gringo and expat who's ever driven here in Latin America, it's the drivers that are much more dangerous in every respect than the cars they're driving, no matter how bruised and dented they look. You've heard me tell the stories. For example, that half the motorcyclists don't even have licenses or they're expired. That only about 10% of Latin Americans carry car insurance, even though it's mandated by law. That drinking and driving is so ubiquitous, it's practically normal, with people driving around with open beer and booze in the car, even at 10 in the morning. The cops even tolerate it. Most of them are drinkers themselves. Then you got all those Latin American drivers, probably 95% of them, that don't even know the basic rules of the road. They pass on curves. They don't know what the lane center lines signify. They don't know to give pedestrians the right of way. They routinely run red lights and stop signs. Think nothing of driving the wrong way down a one-way street. Hog lanes, stop anywhere they feel like it. Drive with cracked and broken windshields and burnt out lights. And yet, these articles come out in the first world blaming Latin American accidents and fatalities on the car manufacturers. How ridiculous is that? Without a single mention of the huge quantity of shit for brains drivers. Talk about first world spin and fake news. I'm calling BS on all of it. Now, I'm not saying Latin American manufacturers shouldn't put ABS systems and 6 airbags at least in every car. But that does not do a thing to cure the underlying problem. Shit for brains drivers and cops that don't enforce the traffic laws because they don't even know them themselves. That's even considering that throughout Latin America, including Mexico, they have no other car safety norms other than general seatbelt requirements, and the cops don't even enforce those. They don't even have laws yet for 3-point shoulder belts necessary to secure child safety seats. Just saying. A pretty sticky wicket, as the Brits might say. Enough said about that. Well, almost enough. One more thing about cars. Remember, in a past show or two, I mentioned that when you're in Mexico and Central America, the price of cars is pretty much the same as it is up in the States, whether you're talking about new or used cars. In fact, sometimes you'll find used cars are a lot less expensive than the same model and year in the States because there's an oversupply of them. Too many have been driven down. Most of them were bought at auctions and were wrecks or crashed, then brought down and repaired because it's so cheap to do it down here. You've heard the story. So there always seems to be an oversupply of used vehicles. So with a supply greater than the demand, there's a lot of room to dicker. So that's the situation in Central America. However, when you're talking about the Caribbean islands, since we talk about Latin America, let's talk about Latin American Caribbean islands, the Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico. Skip Cuba. There's no car market there. Anyway, in any Caribbean island country, you'll pay a third more to double the price of the cars in the States or Central America because their rotten, mismanaged governments have a monopoly on extracting import taxes out of everything into the country. Though that's to be expected. If you've ever been on vacation in, let's say, the Bahamas, Jamaica, the Caymans, Turks and Caicos, Virgin Islands, any one of them, you'll find everything that's imported more expensive than you pay for it up in the States. That includes pretty much everything except some foodstuffs. Even worse is the extremely high price of electricity in any island country. And you should know, and I'm going to repeat this, I've said this before, if you're in South America, you know, below Panama, you'll routinely pay twice as much for the very same car you can get up in the States or in the mainland of Central America. Even though Brazil has huge car manufacturing facilities producing lots of well-known makes and models. And you have to wonder, how does that make sense when they've got the same kind of facilities in Mexico and the price of cars is about the same as in the States? But in Brazil or anywhere in South America, you're paying around double. Well, again, it's those wickedly corrupt, blood-sucking government parasites who simply bleed legit industries for taxes. And there is a reason why. It's because the average person pays no taxes. There are so many people off the books. And since tax evasion is the national sport in Latin America, right behind soccer and marital infidelity, one of the only ways for governments to tap the wealth of the masses is to tax the hell out of legit industries, like car manufacturers. And of course, that creates a domino effect for the used car business, too. For example, I'm looking at Cuenca, Ecuador's biggest newspaper right now, checking out the classified ads. I'm seeing a Jeep Wagoneer for sale, a 1987, you heard me right, 87 4x4 automatic. Condition? Nítido, that means tip-top condition, though they never really are, but everyone's ad says nítido. In every used car or used anything classified ad, nítido means great shape. However, just think about it. We're talking about a 1987 Jeep. How can that thing, being in Latin America for so long, ever be in tip-top condition? Anyway, the ad says, description, immaculate condition. Yeah, right. Limited edition. And they've got pictures here. It doesn't look like it's in any great shape at all. But it's not falling apart either. Come on. Do you have anything that's 35 years old and still works like new, including yourself? Oh, yeah, right. And when you buy it, try getting parts for it. Remember, it's 35 years old. And what does the owner want for this gem? Try $9,500. Yeah, you heard me right. $9,500 for a 35-year-old Jeep. We're talking about one of those ugly Wagoneers. Looks like a station wagon with a fake wood panel on the side. You know, that synthetic metal wood. Boy, 80s car stylings were for crap, huh? Anyway, we're not even talking about a classic Jeep that might have antique value like a Willys. In the States, you could pick up one for around $4,000, less than half. Funny thing, too, the seller didn't dare put in the mileage on that thing. Probably been spun around a couple times already. Anyway, just to let you know, another reason I don't quite like South America as much as I like Central America. The government's got you by the balls on anything that's imported. They just tax the hell out of you. And for proof, you need to look no farther than the ridiculous car prices. Anyway, if you have any doubts as to what I'm saying here, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a copy of this ad with the photos. You won't believe it.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!